Hello and welcome to this month's coaching call for the Sales Transformation Mastermind program. I'm so excited to have you here, either live or listening to the replay. And today's call, the theme is going to be a little bit varied, but it really starts with how to be perceived and how to set yourself up as the high value expert. That's going to be the overall theme. How we're going to be exploring that in a lot of different ways, I think it'll be very varied, and I think you'll really enjoy both thinking about the mindsets, but also very specific tactics that you're going to be able to implement right away. And as always, these calls include, and the content is created from the forum for the Sales Transformation Mastermind program. Every single person listening to this has access to that forum. So get into the forum, ask questions. I love answering questions in that forum. I think it's such a fun way to really, for me, to keep my finger on the pulse of the challenges that people are having, and at the same time, to really have a direct one-on-one connection with people. I think people don't utilize that asset, that resource enough. So get your ass in the forum. Ask questions, make a comment, answer a question, whatever it is, but just get yourself involved. So with that said, we are going to kick off with answering the first question, which comes from Devi, who is still a newbie in the program, but I know that he's been around asking some questions for a little while. And this is about asking to match the price shared by competitors. So Debbie writes, I am in the B2B HR software sales world. In the market, there are at least 700 big and small competitors. Though our product is great, I commonly come across requests for more of a discount from the commercial accounts. With such huge competition, saying no affects my business. Should I give more discounts in these types of situations? So I love this question because for many reasons. But the first is that I want to start by saying that this issue affects every single industry that you could possibly be selling. In fact, there's literally nothing that you can be selling that doesn't have tons and tons of competition. The only way that what you sell doesn't have competition is the following. Either you're selling something that people don't want to buy, and so there's not competition because there are other people aren't saying to themselves, geez, I can make a lot of money selling that. Or B, you are brand new and you're literally first to market, which is also can be have its other challenges. But any profitable sale is going to be highly competitive, whether we're talking about MySpace, like the sales training and sales consulting space. There are tons of people out there. There are hundreds, thousands of people that my buyers can choose from, yet they choose me. And just like Debbie has hundreds and hundreds of competitors, but there is literally no industry that's not highly competitive. That's the way economics works. When I studied economics at Oxford in the UK, you know, it opened my mind to understand how this applies to sales, because if what you sell is highly competitive, don't look at that as a liability. Look at it as, well, yeah, it's highly competitive because what I sell is really profitable and it's a space that a lot of people want to be selling in. So it's not a bad thing. That's the first thing that I just want to say. And there's no industry that doesn't have highly competitive sales space. But now let's get into the question about asking for discounts. This, again, is really common no matter what your space. I've never met a salesperson that doesn't, you know, at some point get asked for a discount. The people, though, that are getting asked for discounts consistently, I think, are making a strategic and tactical error. And so I think Debbie is falling into the trap of pitching his product. If you are consistently pitching your product to clients and talking about all the value and telling them why they need to be doing business with you, what's ultimately happening is that they're likely to see you as like all the other salespeople out there. They're likely to see you as very low value. And as a result, they're saying to themselves, well, you know, can you at least give me a discount? If I'm going to do business with you, can you give me a better deal? And when you are putting yourself into that situation, you know, that's what happens. People ask for deals. If they see you as very high value, they're not going to be asking for deals. So what I recommend to Debbie and anyone who is having real price issues and real ability to present value is to take a step back. This isn't a quick fix. This isn't a what do I say when they say this kind of a situation. Because what you ultimately want to do is you want to avoid falling into this situation in the first place. And you do that by stop pitching and instead really create value by asking questions, by understanding what's going on. You know, Debbie is in the B2B HR software sales. And I don't know exactly what that means, but I've sold to many HR professionals. And so I imagine that it's, you know, something to do with maybe payroll or, you know, some kind of employee management. And, you know, there are real problems that these HR professionals are having. And identifying those problems that they're having is what is ultimately going to allow Debbie to show why someone should actually pay full price for his service or his product. I mean, he said that his product is great. So if that's the case, then chances are that product is going to solve a lot of problems for an HR professional. It's when they don't see the value is when they start asking for the discounts. And so we really do need to take a step back, whether it means listening to my audiobook, the Game Plan Selling audiobook, and really going through the process. And by the way, if you are on this program and you have not listened to that entire audiobook, it is chock full of resources. It is gold. There's so much good content in there. And every single person who's listening to this has access to that book. Just be sure you go into the Mastermind portal and you download the book. And you can listen to it while you're in the car, or you can listen to it on the plane, or whatever you're doing, while you're running, it doesn't matter. But you really want to take a step back and develop a more systematic sales process that involves asking really good questions. Things like, you know, George, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges with employee management that you're facing right now? You know, I'm using Debbie's example. And the HR professional says, oh, you know, well, right now we're you know, really struggling to you know, understand exactly what our people are doing on a day-to-day basis. So tell me a little bit more about that. You know, what is this challenge costing your organization? You say, oh, we're a big organization. This is costing us millions and millions of dollars. Right? You start to have those types of conversations, and I promise you, you are going to get far less pushback on price. And then lastly, if when someone does push back on price, just don't cave. Have the guts to stand your ground. You know, a lot of times buyers, assuming they see value in your offering and that they think that you are someone that they trust and they're a trusted advisor, sometimes people reflexively ask for a discount. And the response is always the same. You know, George, I appreciate you asking me that. We are very consistent and transparent with our pricing, and so we can't change our pricing. Is there a reason that you're asking me that? Turn it back on them. And they say, oh, well, you know, I was just curious, you know. Or they say, oh, well, you know, we really can't afford it at this. But now you're in a conversation. Don't get defensive. Just hang in there. But really the key is to avoid that question from ever happening in the first place. I promise you, I've heard this question so many times. The reason Debbie is finding himself in this problem is because as soon as he gets someone on the phone, he's pitching them on all the reasons that they need to be doing business with him. He's pitching them on how great his product is, how it solves everyone's problems, right? He's saying all these big things that are these big promises that the buyer's thinking, yeah. Okay, so can you give me a discount on this? I know you guys are, you know, one of the better out there. Give me a discount. Come on, give me a deal, and then we can talk. Right? It's because the buyer's not seeing the value. So many of the problems that he has and you will probably have can literally just evaporate when you take that step back and you start off at the beginning with that right approach. So I hope that makes sense to Debbie. I hope that makes sense to everyone listening to this, because it's really so foundational. 90% of the problems that you are having are because you're not using a systematic approach. All of those problems go away once you start using a systematic approach. I'll just give you an example that's outside of sales. This idea of people always asking about these tactics, when in reality what solves it is just having the right approach. We just recently got a puppy. We got a little chocolate Labrador. Her name is Moose, and she is the new light of our lives. We love her. And so what we have done is we have, because we believe in doing things right and not reinventing the wheel, we hired a dog trainer, and we've read a lot of books on training. And one of the things about dog training, particularly with puppies, that you learn is that 90% of behavioral problems with puppies occur just because the dog doesn't get enough exercise, particularly in the morning. They have all this energy, right? So most of the problems that we see people struggling with their puppies, the reason that they're having these problems is simply because they aren't exercising the dog. They're not getting the dogs that all that kind of nervous, jittery energy out in the morning. And then they say to themselves, oh, my dog's being bad because they're anxious and they're frustrated and all this stuff. But if they just exercise the dog, that solves so many of the problems. And I think here it's the same thing, right? Most of the problems that people are having in terms of not being perceived as high value and all of that are because we're not using a systematic approach. We're not asking the right questions. Instead, we're just using our instinct and our gut, and we're going in and we're pitching and we're doing the real old school traditional stuff. So change that and amazing things happen. And a free resource, it wasn't free, you paid for it, but every single person on this call has access to my game plan selling book. You've already read it or listened to it before, go through it again. Get more out of it. Get more out of it. So I hope that makes sense. The next question that I think fits in line with the same idea here, but it's I think going to have a different angle, comes from William, who just posted this question the other day. And he says, you know, earlier you mentioned that you have to dig deep and be bold. Do you have any suggestions on how to develop this? I'm generally a pretty passive individual. I owned my own landscape and masonry company for the last 20 years. My customers usually came to me. I'm now selling payment processing and collection services. So I love this question. I think it's great because I think it's both a mindset and a tactics question. About how do we get, first, I see really two questions here. First is, how do I get the guts to really push prospects, to go deep, to really understand what's going on? And then the second question is, how do I actually take someone more deeply, into a process? And so the first, let's answer it on two levels. The first is, you know, how do I get the guts? How do I do it? And so one of the simplest answers is, you just have to do it. You just have to be willing to take risks. You have to understand that the risk of losing the business is not that big a risk. William is in the payment processing and collection services business. There are so many opportunities out there. There are so many prospects who are struggling, who just desperately need his help. And so, you know what? My recommendation is, for the next 5 prospects, take crazy risks. Say weird things. Try anything. Because the reality is that you've got nothing to lose. I know it's tongue-in-cheek, but it's very real. Be willing to be bold. If you don't see yourself as bold and as a risk-taker, change that. You've got to be, in order to be a superstar in sales, you've got to be willing to take risks. I'll give you a very simple example of taking a risk in a sale. If a prospect, have you ever been in a selling situation where you're going through the motions with them and you just get the sense that they're not really into it? They really just don't seem to care. Now, 90% of salespeople or 99% of salespeople are just going to keep pushing through. They're going to ignore that alarm bell in their head and they're just going to keep pushing through and they're going to try to close the sale. Instead, stop the selling situation. Take a risk. Stop it. Say something like this. You know what, George? I really appreciate this conversation so far, but my sense is that it seems like you just really aren't interested in what we're talking about. Is that fair? Now, most people on this call are thinking to themselves, whoa, that's pretty intense. It's pretty confrontational. It's pretty gutsy. But you know what? I've said that so many times, and I cannot tell you the number of times a prospect says, oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. I'm just distracted. You know, my daughter just got sent home from school, and I just have other things going on. But you know what? This is really important, and I want to have this conversation. So let me put my phone down, and let's have this conversation. I can't tell you the number of times that someone has said, no. This is important to me. I really need to get this figured out. And then every once in a while, someone says, you know what? You're right. This really isn't a priority right now. We've got other things that we're focused on. And, you know, in this case, the time is just not right. And then I respond with, well, tell me a little bit more about that. Help me understand that. And so then they dig into that and then they go in. And you know what? I either determine it's not a fit or it is a fit. But either way, I've taken a risk. I've stopped the selling situation. I've been willing to go deeper, and I've been willing to do something that might be outside of my comfort zone. But my feeling is, until that person has signed the contract and the check is cleared, I've lost nothing. An opportunity is not a sale. An opportunity is simply an opportunity. So if you take a risk and for some reason it backfires, in the unlikely event that it backfires, so be it. William, be willing to take those risks. And what I find is that when I first started selling, I was timid like the rest. I mean, I was actually talking about this with someone earlier today. You know, I would be really nervous. And so I'd be uncomfortable stopping a selling situation. I'd be uncomfortable calling a prospect out. But once I was challenged enough times and I tried it and I started to see, you know what? They're not shooting at me. There's no physical danger. All of those nerves, all of that fear that we feel when we're in a selling situation, it's not real. There's literally no physical danger that you're in. So your fear instinct doesn't entirely make sense in a selling situation. So take risks. Be willing to go deep. And so I think that leads us into the second part of this question, which is, okay, so how do I physically go deep? And that starts with asking really powerful questions. That starts with being willing to and finding important the information that's in their head, understanding what's going on, asking questions like, you know what, George, tell me, what would you say is your biggest challenge when it comes to payment processing? Or what are your biggest frustrations when it comes to collections? And I'm just using questions for William. And then once we get them talking, it's so tell me a little bit more about that. What has this challenge cost you in the past? Or if you were able to solve this, what would it mean to your organization? And then going through the whole process, which by the way, I lay out exactly in the Game Plan Selling book, which you all have access to. If you have not read that book or if you've not listened to that audiobook, get your ass in there and download it and listen to it. Because it's going to, again, this goes back to my question from Debbie earlier, is now we're talking about a system issue. And you do need the actual system. You need the guts to implement it and to really use it, but you do need the right system. So you're not going to learn that whole system on this call, but let this call be a fire under your ass. Let it be that spark that gets you to actually go through the program, to listen to that book, and then implement those ideas. William and everyone else, if you implement those ideas, I'm telling you, you are going to be so much more comfortable going deeply. You're going to be able to create more value in the eyes of your prospects. So you're going to be able to close more sales at higher prices, and you're going to have more people in your pipeline, because you're going to be that much more effective. And when you factor in all three of those ideas, I'm telling you, it is so multiplicative. It is exponential in terms of the sales growth that you can achieve. So get out there, use the ideas, and then refine and tune and bring it back in. And so this last question comes from Bradley, who asks about leaving messages with assistants. And again, I think that this is going to be obviously very tactical, but it's also about guts. It's about mindset. When you're making a call to someone that you don't know, and presumably if they have an assistant, they're a higher level prospect, selling to these people does take a little bit more guts, because it's not that it's actually physically different. It's basically the same thing. But it just takes more mental guts. And so I love this question. So Bradley writes, when prospecting to CEOs, many times the assistant acts as the voicemail and insists on taking a message. Since I have a limited number of prospects, I have to call on the same people fairly often. I know the assistant can't sell me to the prospect and will not deliver the same message I would over voicemail. Should I deny her request to take a message, or should I leave one? And if so, what kind of message and how often should I leave the message? So this is a great, great question. And I love it for so many reasons. And it starts with first understanding the world and life of a CEO, and then understanding the world and life of the CEO's assistant. So let's first start with the assistant, because I think it's tactically tricky once you actually talk to the assistant. So let's say you do call and you get the assistant on the phone. And so you say, hi, Sherry. This is Bradley Newman calling. Is George around? And the assistant says, where are you calling from? Now, this is an interesting moment, because the assistant is going into a reflexive and automated response that he or she knows is going to weed people out. So there are two competing influences in a gatekeeper's mind. One is that they want to keep out the rabble. They want to keep the salespeople out. They don't want to let the salespeople through. So they're going to try to get to a voicemail and all that. The other competing interest, though, is that they're terrified of keeping out the wrong person. They're terrified of keeping out the person that actually was an important call that the CEO wanted to receive, and the assistant kept them out. And the second, the fear piece, is actually a much higher priority than keeping out those rabble salespeople. The CEO is less likely to get angry at the assistant for letting in the salesperson than keeping out a potential investor, let's say. And so you do have to remember that when talking to assistants, is that I think a lot of salespeople try to go with a really charming and friendly, and like, hey, you know, this is Billy from XYZ company, and I have a message for your CEO. And I can tell you with 100% confidence, that is not going to be an effective approach. Because what you want to do is, when you're making a call and you actually do get the assistant on the phone, you want them to think, wait, is this a salesperson or is this someone important? So what you want to do is actually be a little evasive on the phone. Now, again, I'm not crazy about voicemail strategies, and we'll talk about that in a second. But if you do have them on the phone, what you want to do is you want to be a little bit evasive and a little bit confusing in your answers. So they'll say something like, so where are you calling from? And I'll say, Boston. And they're like, okay, and maybe they'll put you through. Or they're going to say, but what company? I'll say, oh, just Mark Weishaupt. I'm like, well, what's this in regards to? And you say, well, actually, I'm responding to an email that we had been going back and forth on. Now, do you see the curt nature of my responses? Now, the specific answers that I'm giving don't really matter. I'm just being coy. But what you want to do is just be very quick, very short, and let the pauses, the silences do the work, because it's putting tremendous pressure on the assistant to put you through. You actually might get through. What you want to avoid, though, is leaving a message for the assistant, because that's useless. And Bradley had asked, you know, is there a specific strategy for leaving a message with the assistant? And the answer is no. If the assistant says, you know, oh, sorry, you know, Gary's not around, you say, okay, well, does he have a voicemail? And they say either yes or no. And if not, then I would just say, okay, well, you know what? I'm traveling around a lot this week, so it might just be easier if I try back later. Say, okay, get off the phone. Get away. Now, I tend to avoid gatekeeper strategies because I imagine a lot of people listening to this call right now are pretty uncomfortable with the strategies that I just suggested. It's scary. It's uncomfortable. You're really putting it out there. But if you are selling to high-level prospects, you are going to need a strategy for once you actually get the assistant on the phone. So be curt, be a little elusive, and be tough. You know, it's not about being friendly. You don't want to be unfriendly. You don't want to be confrontational, but you just want to be direct. Imagine that you're the venture capitalist. You know, you're some very important person. How would you be speaking if you're just the most important person that's calling on the CEO all day? Talk like that, you know. And she's like, oh, where are you from? Boston. Silence. Just let it out there. Let her or him struggle. And you're much more likely to get through. If in the end you have to leave a message, don't leave a message. Just be like, oh, yeah, you know, oh, God. Again, you're really important. I'm traveling. I have a bunch of meetings. You know, I'm traveling this week. I have a lot of meetings. So it just might be easier if I just try back. Is there a best time, do you think, when Gary might be around? And the assistant's like, blah, blah, blah. You know, technically, you know, actually, he's around tomorrow. Okay. I may or may not be able to try back tomorrow, but I'll give it a shot. You know, just as if you're the busiest person that's calling CEO all day. That kind of stuff. And I think now you can start to see why this is also a mindset piece. This is about being perceived as the high level sale, the highest level person out there. You are the CEO of your own world. You start to think like that, and that's where you start cooking with gasoline, baby. Now, the other thing that I will just say to, in terms of gatekeeper stuff, we can talk about gatekeeper strategies all day. And it's fun and it's aggressive and it's very it's very testosterone-y and all that. But the reality is that what I started with was the life of the assistant. And then the other thing, though, is that you want to consider is the life of the CEO and the contrast between those two lives. So let's first think the life of the assistant. What are the typical hours that an assistant works at a, let's say, Fortune 500 company or a Fortune 1000 company? Typical hours of a Fortune 1000 assistant to a CEO would probably be 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock at best. It's probably more like 8:30 to 5:30 though still. It's probably not 9 to 5 anymore, but it's more like 8:30 to 5:30. Now, so we've established 8:30 to 5:30 and it's Monday through Friday. No Saturdays, no Sundays. And bank holidays. They're going to take. On the other hand, what are the hours? What's the life of a CEO? What hours do you think the CEO works? The typical CEO of a Fortune 1000 company is working realistically from about 6 a.m. to about 9 p.m. And they're also working on Sundays. And then they're probably responding to emails on Sundays. I'm sorry, they're working on Saturdays and they're responding to emails from home on Sundays while they're with their family. Who are, by the way, very frustrated and angry with them that they do so much work. Understanding that distinction is really important because now what you're going to see is that there's a big gap in the times when a CEO would be at their office, yet the assistant does not. And the biggest gaps would be in the morning from about 6 a.m. to about 8 a.m. At night from about 6 p.m. to about, let's say, 8:30, 9 o'clock p.m. And then on Saturdays. CEOs are at the office on Saturdays. You want to catch a CEO? Go to the parking lot of a Fortune 500 company on a Saturday. You're going to see their car there. And in fact, it shows you usually the parking spot for the CEO. Their car will be there. It's going to be a really nice car, and it will be there on Saturday morning. If it's not there, then yes, maybe they're working remotely, but there's a very good chance that they're actually in the office. So that's when you want to be trying these people, is when the gatekeeper is not there. Because the gatekeeper is just a 9-to-5-er. What you want to be doing is you want to be calling outside of those times to get to this high-level prospect, because it's worth it. You get to that high-level prospect, you get them on the phone, distraction-free, man, you are on fire. And again, start to think like them. Start to think like that CEO. And when you get them on the phone, you've got guts because you see yourself as a CEO. You do that, the world is your oyster. Sales blow up. So today's call was all about being that high-level person. Not the high-level salesperson, but that high-level person, that trusted advisor. You are the peer to the CEO. When you're leaving a message with an assistant, you're the most important. You're the busiest person that's called all week. You're willing to dig deeper with prospects because you've got guts, because you are one of them. That's your peer. And when people are asking you to match prices and all that crap, you don't waste your time with that. Instead, you're using a process that's creating massive value up front to avoid that. And then, of course, in the case when it happens, you don't back down. You hold your feet to the fire. And you sell it at full price. That is what modern selling is all about. That's what being the trusted advisor is all about. So we've covered a lot today, and I'm always big on action. So what are one, two, maybe three ideas that you can implement as a result of what you've listened to on this program today? Go implement it. Go make something happen. And if you've got more questions, get into the forum and ask me a question. Let me know if you're concerned or you tried something and it didn't work. I'll give you my insight. Maybe I'll talk about it on a future call. Get out there and implement this stuff. It's all a waste of time if you're not actually out implementing. So what are you going to implement, and what are you going to do to make sure that this month is an awesome month? It is a rock star month. I can't wait to hear from you in the forum. I cannot wait to hear about your successes in the forum. And be sure to ask any questions that you have. Until next month.